The last couple of years, my goodness, have we seen some gaming acquisitions start floating us by. And for more on this, we are joined by Ben Williams from Lenovo Legion. We're going to have a bit of a powwow about it. How are you, Ben?
Pete, I'm great, mate. It's a very exciting time, very exciting to be here with you, and looking forward for a good chat.
Mate, Lenovo themselves, not out of the realm of acquisitions, so at some point I want to have a chat to you about that, but this is a fascinating thing that we are watching. However, not really something that we haven't seen before. In fact, we can go back as far as, I believe, 2005. There was the $1.7 billion acquisition by Bandai to acquire Namco. So that's how we have Bandai Namco now. But where do we even begin to touch on this subject with regards to gaming acquisitions? How are you seeing it from the top down?
Well, it's pretty interesting, especially when you relate it to what you just mentioned there with Bandai and Namco coming together that so long ago. I mean, 2005 now is so long ago. But it really feels like it's a completely different landscape and different reasoning behind why these companies are getting together. I mean, that one at the time sort of just made sense for the way that those two were working together to get into that partnership. But particularly around like what Xbox is doing, what Microsoft is doing, and picking up people like Bethesda and Activision Blizzard, it really feels it's more like grabbing hold of content as it exists now without changing it so that you've got more product for your platform. And that's as opposed to making a larger publishing sort of behemoth, like the Bandai Namco scenario, where you're potentially making different or better content just because you're bringing together more developers. This one seems more about like an IP grab, similar to what Disney's been doing over the past sort of 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, actually, we're not too far from seeing, I believe the licensing has finished from Netflix for things like Daredevil and Defenders and a lot of other their series. So we'll find those moving across to Disney Plus, and the integration continues there. What I'm interested to hear from you as a bloke who represents a technology organization, so Lenovo Legion, you know, laptops, PCs, high end, constantly integrating, constantly innovating. One of the things that myself and my counterparts often discuss, and in fact we discussed even more so when we started seeing these acquisitions come to light, is that, are we seeing a ceiling with regards to technology start to emerge? And so these companies are looking to the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years or so and going, all right, we're probably not going to be able to punch out any further evolutions in our hardware. So software is what's going to differentiate us.
Look, I don't think those two are mutually exclusive. So I think you're in a position where hardware is growing and constantly growing. I mean, we've seen the difference not within the last 5 years between, let's say, NVIDIA with GTX and RTX, so ray tracing coming in. Like, that's evolutionary jump from sort of one stage to the next from a hardware side of things. And we're even seeing, like, this year, 12th gen Intel CPUs, how much of a ramp up that is from 11th gen, and the sheer volume of improvement that gives year on year is still more than I would have expected over the last couple of years, when generational changes are usually sort of single digit percentage improvements, to then have something like ray tracing come in and blow everyone's mind. I think there's still those significant hardware growth pieces to come. But at the same time, there's software improvements happening in tandem. So we've done a lot of software improvements alongside those sort of real hardware jumps in our own devices. Things like we're using some artificial intelligence to automatically tune the performance and the battery, the thermals, everything, so that you're getting the best possible result out of a device. based on what game you're playing. So it'll automatically say, oh, you're playing Valorant. Well, here in the back end, the AI is going to tune that and make that work better than it possibly would have any other way, if you, even if you did it manually and you're a computer science major. That's just sort of one example of where those advances in software are sort of force multipliers for the advances in hardware that we're seeing coming through. But also you're seeing those changes in consumer, the way consumers are interacting. So I was both surprised that, say, Microsoft picked up Activision Blizzard. I wasn't shocked, because they're doing it to make sure that they've got more content under Game Pass. That's the major reason, right? We're in 2022. Everyone is comfortable with paying subscription services for their entertainment. It's just what you do. And so Microsoft throwing everything behind that and saying, well, we're going to do that for gaming better than anyone else ever has. And we own the IP to make sure that happens exactly the way that Disney did. I mean, it's not shocking. I wouldn't say that's a shocking thing. But there you go. They can still improve the quality of their hardware and continue to bring that IP in using those software solutions at the same time. You don't have to pick one or the other.
US $69 billion deal to pick up Activision Blizzard. And along with that deal, they also picked up King and Candy Crush, who Activision Blizzard acquired in 2015. They acquired them for $6 billion. USD as well. So, you know, huge. Along the way, Microsoft also has picked up ZeniMax Media, have Fallout and Doom. You know, there was $7.5 billion there. They got Mojang, which has Minecraft. They did that in 2014, you know, and obviously we've seen the onflow effect from that, with Microsoft being the go-to, not only enterprise, but consumer solution as well, as far as desktop PCs are concerned. You know, if you've got a desktop PC, you've got Windows generally, and you've also got Minecraft in there as well. They've integrated with education and so on and so forth. So they are certainly spending the money to hedge their bets. The other side of the coin, of course, is we look at Sony. Now, Sony this year is another one who've made an acquisition. It was a bit of a surprise. We're doing it too. $3.6 billion US. They pick up Bungie, who, of course, have Destiny. Now, do you think that Sony still has a long way to go to catch up to Microsoft in terms of this kind of content style play?
Look, I think Sony and Microsoft are doing different things. So while that was, you're right, it was quite an interesting bit of timing when they acquired Bungie so soon after the announcement came through that Microsoft acquired Activision Blizzard, that it really felt like they were trying to push for that relevance. But the way I've seen things over the years, and particularly really polarizing in the last few, is that Sony and Microsoft are really going down different paths. Exactly what you said there, where Microsoft is focusing on being a platform holder that runs across anything, because they have Windows, because they are now looking at Xbox or Game Pass that will run across any device. Whereas Sony have always been much more focused on hardware, and they're a hardware manufacturer, right? They make TVs and stereos and the like, and PlayStations are just part of that hardware division. They arguably, and I would argue for it, they have made some very clever publishing decisions in making sure that the games that are on PlayStation, exclusive to PlayStation, those first-party titles, are amazing, like God of Wars and Last of Us
Spider-Man.
Spider-Man, exactly. Yeah, so insane. Making those pieces of content makes sense, but then for the purchase of the hardware. And having Bungie on board, again, that's another piece of IP that Destiny, I mean, it's been going for years. I jumped back into Destiny in the last couple of months.
You get yourself ready crazy, for Witch Queen? Yeah.
Crazy how well that holds up and how well it's upscaled for a game that's years old now. And it makes a lot of money. Like, it's the number of people who are gagging to buy Witch Queen, like the day it came out. There's a lot of revenue to get from that acquisition. So it's smart for them to have shore up a product that makes people want to buy more PlayStations, whereas Microsoft don't necessarily want people to buy more Xboxes. They just want more people to have Game Pass. So they're both doing a similar thing, but for different reasons, I think is the really short answer of that.
Game Pass, of course, you know, you can get it on PC as well as Xbox. Do you think subscription play is the way of the future?
It's, I think I like the fact that there's the choice. Like my, I consume a lot of TV and movies and always have. My DVD collection is still quite extensive. I don't know what I'm going to do with it, but I did used to buy a lot of those.
Sunday morning swap meet, I reckon, is exactly about the extent of what they're useful for these days.
Five for a dollar, let's go.
Yeah.
But I like the fact that I have access to pretty much anything across all the subscription services. But if I don't, I do. If I can't get it through one of those, then I can go out and purchase a digital copy or a physical copy of that piece of content that I want to watch. And I think there's always going to be a nice place for both. I mean, it's pretty unlikely that I'd go hunting for an old copy of Banjo-Kazooie on Xbox to just own the physical copy, but having Game Pass and the fact that it's there and I can play it, like that's great that I've got access to that at any point. So I think having that nice mix between the two is really the what makes gaming more accessible for everybody, right? Like it's whether you're on whatever platform you happen to be playing on, as long as you have that choice, that's just better for gamers.
Where do you see the potential for these to become blocking strategies against competitors? And by that I mean, you know, Microsoft has Activision Blizzard. They've got some of the biggest titles in history. Sony comes along and picks up Bungie. And for me, the Sony acquisition happened so quickly of Bungie that I felt like that was a... And surely there's more to it behind the scenes that we don't know. But I felt like that was almost a reaction to Microsoft with that mammoth acquisition of their own, going, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to protect ourselves against the potential for Microsoft to say, sorry, but you will not be able to have World of Warcraft, not that it's on PlayStation, but you will not be able to have Call of Duty on your PlayStation anymore. That is exclusive to Game Pass, to PC, and to Xbox. Do you see the potential for something like that to ever happen?
So, I mean, obviously the potential for that is there, and you can't help but look at that in IP wars, particularly obviously in television, like what Disney, we'll go back to Disney again, like what Disney's done, where they've scooped up all their IP from different streaming services and said, sorry, you can't have that because it's going to be on our one. But I think, I don't know, I'm sounding like a bit of a broken record, but I think it goes back to the way that Sony and Microsoft are just treating this differently. So Microsoft purchasing, let's take ZeniMax, for instance. They seem to be buying ZeniMax so they have access to all that product with no license fees to be used on their platforms. But also, ZeniMax is making X amount of dollars out of every Fallout release or every... Doom release or what have you. So that's going to be on their books when Microsoft does their due diligence and says, well, this is what I'm buying. I'm buying this much revenue and this much expenditure. So it doesn't make a lot of sense for them to then go, well, I'm going to cut that revenue in by 40% because it's not going to be on PlayStation. I can't see, I mean, I'm happy to have my eyes opened, but I can't see where they're going to make that up by having exclusivity. I can't see the sheer volume of dollars that they're going to get just out of Game Pass by not letting you play Fallout on a PlayStation. I don't think that's a smart move. I think it's more likely that it will exist in the fashion that it exists now. They will make a dollar every time someone buys it on PlayStation, rock and roll. Like, how great's that? People spending money to use it on your competitor's product, but you're the one making the revenue? That's great, right? Like, so... I can't see that. It seems to be counterproductive to making lots of money to be blocking the competitors in that fashion with those publishers.
2nd of March this year, we saw another gaming company make an acquisition, which was a little different than what we're used to, and that is Epic Games, of course, the makers of Fortnite. And, you know, they did an acquisition of Psyonix not too long ago that owns Rocket League, and that makes perfect sense considering the amount of money that Epic Games is pumping into the esports scene and the competitive gaming scene around the world. But This one, we had a fair old chat about the reasons behind this and the potential for it on the Gaming Australia podcast earlier this week, and that is their acquisition of Bandcamp, which, for people who have never heard of Bandcamp before, it's a platform for independent artists and bands to make their music, upload their music, and have their music discovered and also purchased. Something like that, we had our own sort of thoughts around what Epic Games may use it for. For me, I thought to myself, okay, great, considering that they're doing things like having those huge concerts inside Fortnite, what a great way to skip licensing, a word that you mentioned just a moment ago, and have the drop on any potential up-and-coming talent that might be starting to come through on that platform as well that might at some point take off. Where do you see Epic Games using an acquisition like that?
See, I see that as a particularly interesting one, looking at the way that, from a Lenovo side of things, we see what our consumers are doing and looking at gaming consumers and how they're working, particularly because we're seeing how people are using the more powerful PCs that you have as a gamer with your graphics cards and usually higher-end CPUs and more RAM and the like. We're seeing a lot of crossover with people who are using those devices not just to game, but to do things like create digital art, create music, and the like. So I would say that the Venn diagram that Epic's done on their user base and say what is the number 2, 3, 4 things that our players do when they're not playing games through our service – creation would definitely be all of those things, if not maybe watching Netflix as sort of maybe number 2 or something like that. Buddy, sorry.
You're right.
I know, bud. Just one sec, okay? So having something like Bandcamp where you're engaging the secondary activity that your users are doing on those devices because they're using a high-powered gaming device, just makes a lot of sense. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if that wasn't the first sort of non-gaming thing they picked up. If they picked up something like Blender, where people are creating 3D renders and stuff like that as a hobby and trying to monetize that kind of activity. So, yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense where it's just a platform that you're trying to just, again, similar to what I'll go back to it again, similar to what Microsoft are doing, bring more of what your consumers want to do under the one place so they never have to leave, right? Mm-hmm. And that way you can monetize them however you need to do that. If there's already revenue coming from that product, then rock and roll. If not, then maybe it gels with other parts of what you're creating. But yeah, I would not be surprised if we start to see more of those massive creation tools start to come under those gaming umbrellas, because that's what gamers are doing on their gaming devices.
Ultimately, who benefits? And this question comes with a tinge of, I found a really interesting sentence while I was sort of going through Lenovo Legion's acquisitions over the years. So it wasn't that long ago, it was 2012, September, Lenovo Legion picked up US-based software company Stoneware, which was its first ever software acquisition. If you could give us a 30-seconder on Stoneware, that'd be great. But it does go on to say here that partnering with Lenovo to sell its software during the period, their sales doubled and they were founded in 2000. So their sales doubled by being acquired by Lenovo Legion. So ultimately, for a company like Microsoft who picks up, the companies that they have, or Sony or whoever it is that we happen to be talking about on any given day, who's the main benefactor there? Is it the acquirer or is it the organization being acquired?
Usually it's going to be the acquirer. They're making, unless something goes horribly wrong, they're making those decisions to create either new revenue stream or remove a competitive product from the market. So no one's dropping those massive amounts of dollars just to sort of be charitable to the company that they're picking up. Obviously it benefits depending on the size of the business. If you're a small business and you get all your shares bought out, all of a sudden the entire operation gets a massive windfall and you've done well. But then there's other opportunities where bringing in that company to the acquirer who has more resources available allows you to do more things. You see that from time to time with the way that Google does business, where they Nahemik is a perfect example, right? Like that was a couple of people who worked at Google and said, we want to go and do games, so we're going to leave and make games like Pokemon Go. And Google said, oh, it's okay, we'll create a separate company within Google and you can do it for us.
Yeah.
And now you have the entire resource to throw at that, and you have all the licensing and the IP and the software and everything you need to do to make whatever you want. And we get the revenue because you are owned by Google. Mm. So it's you've got that thing a lot of the time where the studio, a small studio, you see it a lot in game development where a studio gets brought in first party. They get access to significantly more resources than they always would have, which if the culture's done well and if the acquisition culture is done well, that doesn't change the company that's been acquired too much. Basically just get what they were already doing but better. But obviously that can backfire sometimes. And the acquirer wants to put their own in and they're not compatible with what the acquiree has been doing and turns out to be not a great situation for everyone. But yeah, look, Lenovo's got a great history of acquisition. We picked up back in the day majority of IBM's laptop vision. So the reason that I'm talking to you from a Legion 7 today is because of that acquisition, right? So it's
nice product there, mentioned, though. Well done.
But it's a plug, but course. It's also no joke. Right?
Yeah.
Like they would not be doing laptops at all if they had not acquired IBM.
Yeah.
And so or the IBM division. So there's and it's been a part of us now, and that's been integrated into as our mobile division. We've had Legion phones being worked out through some of our Asia Pacific territories. That is a direct result of the fact that we have Motorola acquired. So it can go both ways. I think we've been pretty lucky that we've really good attitude to the way that we've been acquiring companies, and it seems to have worked out really well for everyone involved.
It's 2012. Lenovo goes back into the smartphone market and quickly became the largest vendor of smartphones in mainland China. It's just insane, absolutely insane, because that's quite the market. One of the things that I think it shocked me that Microsoft went ahead and made the acquisition, but then upon thinking a little deeper, I went, okay, quite clever, was they picked up Activision Blizzard at a time where Activision Blizzard were going through a veritable shitstorm of things around Bobby Kotick and, you know, their CEO and the rest of the terrible things that we've now known have come to light that were going on with regards to how those companies were run and how their staff were treated. Do you think Microsoft saw the opportunity to get Activision Blizzard for a much cheaper price given the storm that it was going through? And second part to that question, where if Activision Blizzard were squeaky clean, do you reckon they would have had to pay a bit more for them?
It's tricky, right? Like you'd like to think that Microsoft's come in and gone, sweet, we can get a deal because there's bad PR. But also at the same time, an acquisition like that doesn't happen overnight. Mm. Like that would have been in the works if not months, years, which while the reputation the reputation might have been clean, but obviously scenarios were still sitting there underlying and only coming to light recently. How much that would have affected the sale price, really hard to say. That may have affected how speedily they got to resolve it. Maybe Activision Blizzard were quick to go, yep, let's as quickly as we can and not draw it out. So that it's all done and over. But yeah, I'd be just to how much that affected the actual price, just on how long those proceedings can take, I think is probably the best way I see it.
Fair enough. One more thing, mate, but you go.
Yeah.
And again, thank you so much for your time on this subject. It's a fascinating chat. But I spoke a little while ago with the former editor of Kotaku here in Australia, Alex Walker. Now moved on to the Gamers Group and doing a wonderful job of that, as we expect. But we were talking about the implications for the metaverse moving forward. Now, Microsoft, of course, doing extensive work and investment in the metaverse. Facebook, another one, you know, having committed $10 billion to the project and is continuing to further that. They've got Oculus, which they acquired. Clearly, it's coming to light now that that has a lot to do with what their progressive plans were going to be. And of course, this very foundation that we're speaking on, Teams, I'm sure we'll see that integrated into Microsoft's version of whatever metaverse it can come to pass. But of course, they're going to need to fill that with content. Do you think that, you know, in their minds, continuing to make these acquisitions and continuing to build their content library is going to ultimately be a benefit to whatever metaverse it is that they're creating? Or are they doing this with that in mind in the first place?
I think metaverse is an interesting one where it's really, it can be as big or as small as anyone needs it to be. And it's really just going to sort of amplify what everyone else is doing. Yes, absolutely. Microsoft will be able to leverage the fact they've got all this IP and these platforms into their metaverse play. But that also wouldn't stop them doing it outside of metaverse at the same time. Like, I think it's one of those things where if everyone is linking up as in these seamless worlds through metaverses as much as we're all hoping it will work that way and be able to engage with the consumers and the gamers in that way, then they absolutely stand just by rights of having so much IP to be able to really ram that home. But then you could argue that Tencent had the same, right, with the amount of stuff that they've got under their umbrella, just and being such a cross-platform publisher, it will definitely, having access to all of that will allow them to do some really interesting things, particularly when you're talking about the level of, I'm assuming where a lot of the revenue is going to start to come from is customization of what you can do with your own personal activity, just looking at how people engage with games and content these days. So again, having all of that IP means that you're the one who can sell Fallout and World of Warcraft steeds for people to use on their metaverse avatars, characters, however they're going to describe it. Yeah, having access to all that IP, I mean, that's where the money's going to come from, I guess. So I think it's an interesting space to be able to make sure they're shoring up the fashion and style desires of gamers in the metaverse. So I think they've got a good opportunity there.
Just quickly, let's pull out our Christmas ball. Well, Christmas when you think about it, our crystal ball. What's the next acquisition?
Oh, see, that's a tricky one, right?
It's a tricky one. It is a tricky one because when we were chatting about it, myself and Alex, same chat a little while ago, we thought to ourselves, maybe we'll see Square Enix get picked up by somebody. And then, of course, Sony came out and went, whack, here, have Bungie. So, yeah, what are your thoughts, mate? You got any sort of smokies that might get picked up?
Look, you'd love to see it, right? Like, there's so many interesting ones, large independent people. Like, you've got people like Paradox and stuff like that who make some phenomenal games, but most of that's sort of PC-based. But you've also, like, from a smaller side of things, you have a lot of people acquiring a lot of stuff over the years. I mean, Embracer, who own Koch Media and THQ Nordic, like, that's literally their go-to move, right? Like, they acquire studios and small publishers, like, every month. And you'd go bananas, like, looking at the list of acquisitions they've had over the last couple of years. So, I mean, from something of the big ones, like, I feel like Sega's probably still got a good opportunity there just because of the longevity of the IP, and with, I mean, Sonic coming back to the films that and doing particularly well, they've got to look attractive. But yeah, look, it's a bit hard. Bungie coming so left field, but also being small, and then Activision Blizzard coming so left field and being huge. There's no like, oh, here's the trend. Who's got stupid amounts of cash? Let's go and buy something. Yeah.
Okay. So the journalist in me says, answer the question. I need one name.
Oh, man. One name. Just Sega. One. I said a name. Sega.
We're going Sega? Okay. Yeah. Locking you in for Sega. Yep. Mate, what a pleasure. Ben Williams, Lenovo Legion. As always, mate, it's lovely to chat to you. And thank you very much for giving me your time today.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Pete. It was wonderful. And look forward to chatting you more in the future.
All right, here we go. One. Game on. time. Excellent. Game on. Game on. It's gaming time. Excellent.
Oh, my God.
Here we are, Pete. Here we are. Welcome, everybody. Welcome to another Goal Weekly Show. And just quietly, man, that was such a good chat with Ben Williams. That was just... I loved hearing about, like, from his experience in Lenovo about the acquisitions and what he was seeing in the background with some of that sort of stuff.
Yeah, mate. Very interesting dude. Has been around the scene for a very, very long time. Those of you might remember... it escapes me, but there was an esports competition that made its way from the UK to here in Australia, and it was being broadcast on Network 10 on sort of Saturday and Sunday mornings. I can't quite bloody remember what it was now. Gfinity. So, he used to be a part of Gfinity and has, you know, had a long and illustrious career in sort of the games and tech space. He's a great dude, and Lenovo Legion obviously being an incredible organisation. So very cool to have him and have his time. He's got some really interesting points and some insights. I think that's the stuff that I was really after in particular with regards to acquisitions because, all the acquisitions we've seen so far, I don't think it's going to stop anytime soon and neither does he. So we're only just touching the surface, I reckon.
Yeah, it's an interesting space and like how you're talking about, it's not just games that are doing this, like Disney likes to buy up everything themselves. Like they own Star Wars, they own Marvel, they own Disney to start with, all that stuff. But it, in the terms of the game space, it presents an interesting ecosystem where, especially when the... I'm gonna work off Xbox and Sony here because Nintendo... sort of exist in this strange little bubble where they're Nintendo and they do Nintendo things. But it's different philosophies where Xbox wants you in their ecosystem playing their stuff, where Sony is still going the somewhat traditional route. And like Ben says, it's great that we got the choice. So you've got those two different ecosystems because I'm still old school. I like owning a physical thing because if Games Pass disappeared tomorrow or Xbox or Microsoft suddenly went up in a ball of smoke somewhere, all that stuff that you were paying for is gone and you don't have it there anymore. Same with Netflix, same with any of those subscription services. If they disappear, then the stuff that you're using is gone. So I still like having my physical stuff.
You know, you pose an interesting point. Sure, they're gone. I think maybe that's another conversation for us to have at some point. You know, just pose the question, what would happen if Sony and Xbox disappeared off the face of the earth tomorrow? Because, you know, obviously there'd be something out there to take its place. So, you know, we live in that sort of world now where companies are so incredibly savvy and the digital space is so easy to occupy if you're already worth a lot of money as a company and you can sort of react quickly. And there's a lot of companies I dare say would be out there very interested in occupying the space of Xbox and PlayStation. So it'll be one of those interesting things, man, where I think if they sort of disappeared tomorrow, then it wouldn't be long before we had something that took their place. Mm. And so we'd have those libraries back and
It wouldn't be vacuum for long.
Come home. But there was another acquisition today. I see Tencent. Made another acquisition, which is insane. People who think of Tencent, you sort of throw them in there as well. I think once sort of all this Microsoft came to a head, then we had an opportunity to start looking through figures and, you know, it just so happens that Tencent's pretty much the largest games company in the entire world, which is wild. You grow up, you know, for so long playing PlayStation and Xbox and Nintendo before looking through all of this stuff deeply and you think, those are the big players, but there's a lot out there.
Tencent in particular is like I must have, I think I became aware of them myself only like a year or two ago, and it's a little bit concerning that a company that's this big and has such a say in so much of what the industry does. They own Riot. They own, if they don't own outright, they own a controlling stake in Epic. They own a lot, and it's just crazy. And now they've bought game developer, they bought majority share of game developer Tequila Works, which Natty has written about for the Goa website there. It's, I must admit, I haven't heard of Tequila Works myself. There were a few, Natty did lift off a few titles in there, as in Rhyme and Sexy Brutale, with some other things like Deadlight, Guilt, and Invisible Hours. So I must admit, out of that, I've only heard of Rhyme myself, which has been on my list to play because apparently it breaks you, like will emotionally destroy you playing.
I've played Rhyme, and that was off the back of one of our other writers who's away at the moment, Nico. I was just sort of floating around, said, mate, I need something new to play, and I want something that I'm really going to be able to sort of sink myself into. And he was like, yeah, mate, get Rhyme, you'll cry. And I did. It's such a game that has you emotionally invested. It's gorgeous, it's beautiful, it's sad. There are moments of joy. It sort of brings out everything in you emotionally. It's definitely a game that people should look at, but it's, you know, Tequila Works is one thing and they'll benefit from this. But I mean, Tencent has had some huge acquisitions as well. Graven's developer, 1C Entertainment, Turtle Rock Studio, who have Back for Blood, you know, and of course Tencent, considering where they hail from, you know, they're obviously very well supported by the audience base. And the other thing that they have is they have an incredible grasp on mobile gaming, which, if you don't know, if you're listening to this and you're not sure of this fact, mobile gaming is pretty much the, we all think console gaming and PC gaming is the, mobile gaming, speaking broadly for demographics, is the dominant way that people play. And Tencent have a stranglehold on the mobile gaming market. So to be able to bring, you know, Rhyme to it, to be able to bring Graven Back for Blood, to be able to create mobile versions of these games or integrate mobile in some ways is such an incredibly strong play. I could see Rhyme as a mobile game. Like it's a big game, but it's a game that could fit onto a small screen, if that makes sense. Like, you know how you play like a Skyrim, or you play Witcher 3 or something like that. Like you know how these games, you've got to play them on console on a big screen to really get the full enjoyment. There's just so much going on. Whereas with Rhyme, by virtue of the way that it's developed and the style of the game that it is, it could fit on mobile. You could play it on mobile and I reckon still get the same experience if you had a half-decent set of headphones. So it'd be interesting to see how they use the studios.
And even some phones, like my old phone, granted I've gone cheaper with this phone that I've got currently, but what was the old one? It was like an S10 I had, a Samsung S10. And it was smart enough that even when you were playing without headphones, it did stuff in stereo sound. Like when you get phones that are doing stuff like that, you can see why they're becoming such a dominant force. And all throughout Asia, like mobile gaming is the thing. It's crazy. Just quickly looking at chat, Drop Bear, hello Groover to you as well. 17 months with the Prime sub right there. And Natty also saying Tencent acquired 100 companies relating to gaming last year. Which,
wow.
If I'm being honest, with the money that Tencent has, that doesn't quite sound like a lot to me.
I mean, you know, when you put that into perspective, it was only a few years ago that I think Xbox went around and acquired, or was it 1,500 or 2,000 independent developer studios to create their indie developer studio ID at Xbox. So, yeah, I mean, it's those sort of major market acquisitions going out there and really collecting a lot of studios under a masthead. We've seen it before and seen it done in some big ways. And obviously Game Pass is one of the beneficiaries of ID at Xbox because they've got a lot of AAA games. They've got a huge independent library to choose from as well. Mate, can we just, before we continue on with the show, I need to do something. Can you do me a favor? Can you just smile at your camera, please? Like a big cheesy grin. I want a big cheesy straight jacket gym Smile, please. That's beautiful. There we go. That's nice. I like that. So now I'm going to do this and just wait for Twitch to catch up for just a moment because I want to post this on our socials because you look absolutely gorgeous, my dear friend, with your fresh haircut. It's just Christ almighty, you just look like a completely different human being with what's going on. I don't even know how to describe it for people who are just sort of listening to us. And of course, doing it for a wonderful cause as well, mate. Would you care to fill us in? What happened to you this week?
So I've had long hair. I call it my COVID haircut, a little bit of a midlife crisis haircut as well, because I had long hair when I was a teenager. So over COVID, I've just gone, let's grow it back. So my hair was tied back and got to the end of last year and I'm going, this is really getting annoying now. I want to cut it off. And just by some magic, Facebook must have been listening to me as well, hearing that I was going to cut off my hair. So it's popped up with an ad, Greatest Shave for a Cure is in March. So I went, you know what, I can handle this for 3 more months. And decided to do the world's greatest shave for a cure to like raise some money for the Leukemia Foundation and blood cancers. And it's particularly close to me as well because my mum in late 2020 was diagnosed with a thyroid cancer. So she was quite lucky because she had a pre-existing thyroid condition. So she was very aware of stuff going on with her thyroid and got it checked out early, caught it, and she's been in remission for 6 months. So that's great for mum. We've had a day in between there. Monday was the big day. I shaved my hair off. I find it a bit interesting because my hair has always been really thick. Like you could make rope out of my hair. It's that thick. And even when I went and got it all cut off, I'm sitting there in the hairdresser and she shaved my head with the cutthroat razor twice and it still looked like I had a fine stubble of hair. It's just that thick. We did stream on Monday night with a couple of other little donation incentives, shaved off the beard that I had at the time. So I've gone completely clean shaven. A little bit glad that we didn't get to the goal of shaving off my eyebrows, so I still managed to keep them. In the end, I think it was just over $2,000 we raised on the night. I need to check because I haven't had a look at it since yesterday, I think I had. And why is my computer's deciding it doesn't want to work? Why are you... I'll check it out later, but yeah, I raised just over $2,000 to go towards the cancer research there. So I'm very, very proud to have done that and very grateful to everybody that was so generous. There's a lot of people in our chat that were there watching me and have donated from the Goa community, and I just absolutely, I cannot thank you enough for what you did there. The money is going to such a great cause.
Oh, good on you, mate. You've done a wonderful job. And you support these great opportunities to raise money so often. You're just so dedicated to the cause. And it's wonderful to hear about your mother, on her way to much better things as well. Mm. So good on you, man. I love it. And I stay with it, will you? Don't grow your hair back for a little while. I just want
to... Well, I've had a few people say that, but I just sort of intended to get it done and then just like let it grow out again. And thank you, Blue, in chat. He said it's $2,070 that I raised. That was great. So of course I was doing things like playing stuff on stream. I was played some Rock Band while I was building Lego, which is my favorite go-to thing because I like building Lego on stream. And I get a little bit bored when I just build Lego. So I have to be doing something. So I play Rock Band under the guise of, singing along to the music and getting a way of hopefully, playing music on my stream without getting one of those nasty DMCA strikes. But I don't think it'll protect me, but that's what I tell myself anyway.
my friend, we've got a few things to cover off we want to talk about tonight. Before we get into anything, just a bit of housekeeping, a shout out to our mates at NVIDIA GeForce Now. who I think they've hit 100,000 people signed up to the service, you know, in the past sort of month or so, which is wonderful news. And obviously play your games on the cloud. It's a brand new way to be playing your games, and Pentanet behind them leading that charge with their incredible connection and connectivity across WA. So it's, you know, a big thanks to them for being behind us as always, and our mates at Quantum Energy as well. I saw a few of our community, you know, including yourself. You just got a new package, I think, arrived recently with some new flavors.
So, I did. My first order, I bought a little, like, because you can get a taster satchel. So I did that to start with, and a tub of grape, because I just really like grape flavors. I'm glad I did, because I think that was my favorite out of the taster pack.
Bloody marvelous. Now, mate, there's one thing that we have to get stuck into tonight, and you know, we'll cover off some other things, but this one in particular, it's important. It's close to our hearts, and that is that tonight we are saying goodbye to a legend of the Game On Australia content team and family. Many of you have been watching the show for a long time and listening to the podcast for a long time will have at times heard this man's voice or seen him on the show, or you would have heard us refer to him. His name is The Historian. Chris Inglis, also known as Inferno.
Legend of Goa.
Indeed. A hero in our hallowed halls of gaming. And from the bottom of my heart, Chris, I can't even put into words just how much you mean to this community and you mean to me as a friend, but also somebody who trusted us and trusted myself with your time and your dedication and your passion. Chris, a long, long time ago when we first started doing all of this, we started up a Facebook page, and Chris was one of the first people to like that Facebook page and stumble across our community. He was one of the first 100 likes. He was very early on in the piece. And he was also one of the first to respond and say, I'd love to give it a go, when I put it out there to say, hey, we're launching a website, gameonaus.com. We have no idea what it is that we're doing, but if you'd like to write games, we know a bit about content, we can help you along. And he took it with both hands, and he's been absolutely killing it ever since, to the point where for the past couple of years he's been our master chief editor, or our chief editor. And our community loves you, Chris. Our PR, you know, companies that we talk to so often love you so much. The game developers love you, and with good reason, because you're such an incredibly passionate, dedicated, committed gamer and human being. You exemplify the values that we try so hard here at Game On Australia to instill in the team, and for that to flow on into our community as well. You know, you set such an incredible example, not just as somebody who works so incredibly hard, but also somebody who just treats all the people around him with so much respect. You're an incredibly humble guy, and we are so sad to be losing you, but also completely understanding that this is a tough game. You're a man with a young family, and you've got obligations and things that you are committed to far beyond video games, and you're such a wonderful husband and father. And we can't but wish you all the best, our dear friend. So once again, from the bottom of my heart, and I haven't written anything here, this is all from the heart, mate. So from the bottom of my heart, love you. And thank you for everything that you've done for us, for this brand, for Game On Australia, for the people in this community, for this team, for the website, for the content, for our partners, for the people we have relationships with. Thank you so much for your commitment. Thanks for setting such a high standard. And you will always have a seat at the Game On Australia table, should you ever want it. And I hope one day you decide to pick the pen up again, because you're an extraordinary writer especially for somebody who just started picking it up as a hobby. So thank you, Historian, for everything.
Yeah, yeah. When I joined Goa a couple of years ago, like he was so welcoming. He's just a legend, and I feel incredibly lucky to know him and to have such a good friend there now as well. We've bonded over mutual love of Star Wars to the point where in 2020 we did a online PAX panel together about the history of Star Wars games, which I absolutely loved, and just getting to know him and be around him and learn from him has been incredible.
Man, the wheel turns, doesn't it?
It does.
Look, with that being said, you know, as one man decides that it's time to move on, there is obviously a position there that needs to be filled. And with this, you may have seen the announcements come through today across Twitter with us and with him as well, and he's very excited. But another long-time member of the Gammon Australia family, Zulu, also known as Royce Wilson, is going to be taking over the position of chief editor or editor-in-chief, EIC, of Game on Australia. He's an incredible veteran of the industry. He's got a 20-year pedigree, trained journalist, has written for so many journals and newspapers and stuff across the country and globally, way bigger than we could ever hope to achieve. But somehow we've managed to snap him up, and he's decided to take on the role, and we know he's going to give it absolutely everything. He's dedicated. He's passionate. So welcome once again to the team, but in a new role, because Zulu's been with us for a while, and lovely to have you along, mate, and thank you so much for taking on the position of editor-in-chief, and bloody can't wait to see what you do with it, mate. So good on you.
Oh, yeah, exciting times.
There we go. Far out. Oh, I need a beer.
I'll join you.
Yep.
I've got a bottle of Kraken up here.
Do you?
Yeah, I don't think I can send it through the Discord, though, but, you know, it's here somewhere. But, yeah, I do like, because I like to have a bit of a drink while I'm playing the games, yeah?
Yep.
Yeah, and I... And I do like to know, what have you been playing lately now, Pete?
Oh, look, God. What have I been playing? Excuse me. Just having a moment. Mate, I've still been just mucking around a little bit with Elden Ring, yeah, if I'm honest. So, you know, nothing much further than there. I just can't, you know, the more that I play this game, the more I'm just astounded at the sheer breadth and depth of what is in there. It's absolutely extraordinary. And I've been playing now, I reckon, probably 10, 15 hours, and I'm still not past the first skill check, which Christ. I've been so close so many times, man. So close so many times. It's been so frustrating. But it's so exciting. It's a game where you do get frustrated with it, but God, they do such a good job of, it's just different. It's just different. I've gotten frustrated with games before. I've put them down. I'm not coming back to you. Elden Ring and From Software are just so good at doing this. Elden Ring, I put it down and I go, all right, take a deep breath. This is a skill check. You need to learn and you need to get better. And you need to come back. And I'm just excited to continue to come back to the world. So, yeah, and there's so much of this game I'm starting to discover also is underground. One of the most exciting things that really got me enjoying Skyrim was that when you really dive deep into Skyrim, you realize that there's just as much underground to explore along those lands as there is to see above, right? So, you know, once you start discovering caves and you start going down shafts and going into tombs and all of that sort of stuff. Like it's just incredible how expansive that game is. Elden Ring, very similar. There's a lot of Elden Ring that's underground, and you need to get on your horse and you need to ride around and go looking, because the stuff that you find just makes you want to come back for more. I'm having an absolute ball, mate. What about you?
I, of course, SWTOR, we've got to put in that the Old Republic is still getting a lot of playtime for me. Getting characters through everything, getting them all up to date, playing, doing the weeklies and all that sort of stuff. It's been good fun. But another one, bit of a throwback for me. I played it because I was sort of sitting there thinking for my stream on Monday night for the Greatest Show for Cure. I'm going, what am I going to play? Like, I knew I was going to do Rock Band, but I didn't quite know what else I was going to play. And then I just thought, you know what? I haven't played a Super Mario World ROM hack for a long time. So for those that don't know, Super Mario ROM hacks are games that are using the Super Mario World engine. So this is a Super Nintendo game, Super Mario World, to build a custom game. So a lot of people, there was some video going around, they'd probably know Arsehole Mario, which was the very first sort of, they call it Kaizo Mario, because it's generally a harder sort of rearrangement of Mario stuff. So I got back into Super Quickie World is what it's called. It's designed to be just a quick one. You go fast, you finish the levels. But I got to the last level probably about a year and a half ago, and stopped. I couldn't get past this level. Like, you talk about spending 11 hours in Elden Ring, Pete. I reckon I spent 11 hours trying to clear this one level, and I just couldn't.
I was watching.
Yeah.
Yeah, mate, I was watching this one in particular, and I can imagine it's some real head-bashing stuff.
Mm. But I tell you what, because what my first attempt, that year or so ago, I got really frustrated with that level and I stopped and I quit. On the advice of some people in the Mario community, I went back and did Quickie World 2 because they said that level in particular was a hard one and stopped a lot of people from finishing the game. So I went back and I did finish Quickie World 2, which was good. So I've finished at least one ROM hack, but I thought, you know what, I'm going to go back to this. And within 3 minutes of playing it, I'd made more progress than I had in all that time ago. So I didn't finish it. I think I played it for about 3 hours and didn't quite get through it, but because I'd made that progress, I was there and I'm ready for it. It's like you say with Elden Ring, Pete, and it's what attracts me to a lot of these ROM hacks and the harder sort of Mario levels is that if you're making progress and you've found a way, you've learned the right way of doing it, then you're having fun. Making progress. It may look like bashing your head against the wall, but after a while it becomes muscle memory. And
yeah.
And it's a game that I can also play while I talk to chat and do stuff like that. So,
that's the thing, man. Like Elden Ring, it's exactly that. It's not like you get to this brick wall and you just are bashing your head against the wall because it's just too fucking hard.
Mm.
It's you go. The game is designed to be like, no, mate, you're just not strong enough yet.
Mm.
Go out and explore. Go and find some stuff. Go and learn to craft. Learn the game. And then come back, you know, and that is it's what makes it totally playable for hours on end, even though I'm still stuck at that particular point.
So 11 hours on that, Pete, would it surprise you to know that the speed run for Elden Ring is under half an hour now?
Not at all. Not at all. It's frustrating to know that that's the case, but it's not surprising. How did they get under half an hour?
I watched it the other day and, there's a lot of big, far-out jumps. Like, they're riding along with the horse and then they'll jump and then they do this second jump on the horse and get to this little area that they've discovered they can get to. And lots of, they find some, it looks like an ice bomb of some kind and it does massive damage to a lot of the enemies. So they're using a lot of that. So when that comes to boss fights, because I don't think I saw them fight any regular enemies. It was only the boss fights that they did. And even then, they skipped a whole lot of them.
I have a question for you, a thought. I mean, maybe this is one. I know we had so much to cover off tonight, but with only 10 minutes left, maybe this is sort of our final chat for the evening. Mm. Do you think FromSoft develops a game like that, knowing that the ability to complete it in under half an hour is there? Like, they develop the game with that in mind. Because if you're saying that there's a double jump to a platform that you can get to, right, that platform had to have been created at some point. You know what I mean? So, like, it sort of astounds me that there's just... With a glitch or something like that, I get it. Like, glitches happened. They happened a lot, particularly with, you know, old titles, N64 and stuff like that. They happen a lot these days, but because the games are quite unpolished occasionally when they're released. But something like Elden Ring, if we're talking about just a platform and you can actually reach this platform, do you think they are creating something like that with speedrunners in mind?
I think some devs go out there to do that, and they love, but usually you probably find them in games that have these multiple branching paths. So you could go this way that's harder, or you could go this way that's easier, but it'll take longer. In terms of Elden Ring in particular, I don't think speedrunning really enters the conversation there, because it's such a niche thing, speedrunning. Like, and it's not a very big market that you would try to appeal to. I think a lot of devs are really excited when they see their games take off in speedrunning, but I don't think it's something that they aim for.
Fair point. It's something where I'd love to pick the brains of the FromSoft devs, pick their heads and go, is that an accident? Is there a way this software works that when you're building these levels that occasionally platforms just happen?
Yeah.
It's
interesting as well when you get games like the Doom Eternal speedrun is ridiculous, because they manage to just clip out of bounds and walk through basically the level, but they have to be careful because some places there's collision detection so you don't fall through the floor, which is really the roof. But in other areas, there's not, so they might fall and die. And even stuff like I've seen the PC version of Jedi Fallen Order, where at some point they manage to do this combination of, like, using a force power and cancelling it and using another one that basically makes them fly. And
right.
So then they clip out of bounds and basically fly across the map to the end. It's really ridiculous in how that sort of stuff comes along. And even the older games, like last year, I think Ocarina of Time had a breakthrough where the speed limit is now, it's something, I think, I'm not sure if it's under 10 minutes yet, but it's definitely under 20. And it's just because they learn different things, like that people go and data mine these games, like before the recent find in Ocarina of Time, someone worked out that if you go through Ocarina of Time as normal, you get to the boss fight in the first dungeon there in the Great Deku Tree. And for some reason, the memory location to exit the door in that dungeon is right next to the memory location for Ganon's Tower right at the end of the game. So if you can clip through that door and get out, it exits you right at Ganon's Tower.
Wow. That's wild.
Yeah, but like...
I didn't know that.
Who figures that stuff out, though? Like,
I know. But you know what? Like, I mean, geez, you're 7, 12. 12, 13-year-old me would have played the shit out of Ocarina of Time, right? And 12, 13-year-old me, I remember very, very... Like, I remember going to edges of the map to see how far I could go, you know, because we're talking polygons here. So like mountainsides that are just long things at a 45-degree angle and they're painted mountains and, you know, one meets another and then pisses off to like a 70-degree angle or something like that. Like I remember for hours on end going and finding those corners and just jumping at them. Just to see, Just, I don't know why. I don't even know what I was looking for. I wasn't looking for anything. I was just like, oh, there's like a corner there where two edges meet. I'm just going to jump at it. You know what I mean? That's probably how a lot of this stuff is found. It's freaking awesome.
It's freaking awesome. Yeah. So I think one more question before we go off. Is there anything you're looking forward to playing soon?
Oh, God. I'll tell you one thing I am looking forward to, but it's a bit of a different flavor. I'm looking forward to playing F1 2021.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason being is because I'm really, and, you know, to divert off for a moment, I'm really, really, really into F1 at the moment. Thanks, like probably like a lot of people, to Drive to Survive on Netflix. I'm so invested in these teams and in these people now that when Game Pass released earlier today that they were bringing out F1 2021 to Game Pass, I was like, fuck yeah, I'm going to download that and get stuck into it. So, yeah, I mean, I'm keen to get into that. But that aside, I'll probably download that, muck around with it for a little bit, but Elden Ring's got me. I think Elden Ring will have me until I've completed that game. It'll be at the stage where I'm only playing other games just purely to be able to talk about them on the show or write stuff about them or do content. So, yeah. What about yourself? What about your good self?
Well, aside from Star Wars Lego comes out next month and Advanced Wars 1 and 2 Reboot comes out next month, which I'm really keen for. There's one that Zulu was talking a little bit about in the Discord today in our special admin sort of side of things, called Weird West, which is sort of a little supernatural take on it. And it looks really interesting. And I also noticed today on Twitter, it's coming to Games Pass day one. So I'm just really keen. Like, I read Zulu's article first so I can see what's going on there over at GameOnOz.com. Not out just yet, but it'll be coming, just so I can get a bit more of an idea about it. But yeah, that looks really cool. It looks like an action RPG type dungeon crawler sort of thing. And like I've gotten in pretty heavy with Lost Ark as well, which is sort of a dungeon crawling MMO as well. I haven't played much of it lately because I've been doing other stuff, but like it's same sort of gameplay as that and Diablo. And so I'm keen to see what that's going to be like.
Unreal. Now, mate, before we sort of wrap things up, is it Nuts and Bolts on the way tonight?
It is. It is on straight after this one. So we're going to have a quick little break between the weekly show and the podcast. But I do know we started something a bit new with our community members. So what I'll do is I've queued up a video. So once we're done here, we'll show the video of our community members there. We've got some clips from Gamma, King Cal, and our very own Stormy there playing some games. So, and just some interesting clips. And I'm keen to see them again. I have already watched them because, you know, they're clips. They're nice and short, but particularly Gamma's I love because he's playing some horror game in VR and like...
Bit of a scare, eh?
Oh, yeah. Like, I've got Phasmophobia there in VR, but I'm a little bit scared to try and attempt that because I would shit my pants. Oh, there's no doubt about it. I would, yeah.
I just want to say, if you're watching this right now, so if you're a content creator and you do streaming or you've got things, we want to hear from you. So head to discord.gameonoz.com. That's our ever-present, ever-live get you to Discord link. Drop into general chat, say a quick hello. We've got another introduce yourself chat as well. You know, tell us a little bit about yourself. But then we've got hashtag clip-highlights. And in hashtag clip-highlights, that's where we're asking people as often as they can to drop in their highlights. It can be funny. It can be scary. It can be sad. It can be exciting. It can be amazing moments in the game, whatever. Just clip your great highlights, drop them in there for us. It doesn't necessarily have to be on Twitch either. It can be from anywhere if you've got a great clip or a highlight. Drop them in there, and we want to grab them and we want to show them off across our social media, but also we want to show them off on our shows and such as well. So, mate, at some point down the track, it'll be nice to have prizes with them too. So we're working on those. It's very cool. We got three here. Can I just also say Mad Cats, right? Mad Cats is a, I think me just saying Mad Cats, of our vintage and forward would know who Mad Catz is. I mean, I remember owning Mad Catz steering wheels, you know.
They make all the instruments for Rock Band that I play, that I love.
Yep, they're amazing. They're also partnering with us at the moment for some amazing giveaways. So check out our Twitter. We've got a mouse, a Freak 4, R-F-R-E-Q 4 mouse giveaway going on there at the moment. We've got more giveaways coming up very soon as well. So make sure you check it out. Mad Catz are also in our Discord. They're checking out the hashtag clip-highlights and they're very impressed. So I don't know, maybe something to do there with Mad Catz and their gear and some of those clip highlights as well. So that'd be very cool. Something to keep an eye on, out on. Shall we roll these highlights and we'll get out of here, mate?
I think we should. And just remember, stick around for Nuts and Bolts. Myself and Natty will be back very shortly. But definitely thank you all for joining us tonight and we will see you next week.
I think like the only time where I will probably get annoyed, and it only happened like once, when like someone who I've never met on the stream before like comes into the stream for the first time, doesn't even say hi, and they're like, "What?"